you're hearing this before listening to the weekly show, are you sure you meant to do that? If not, stop now and go do that first.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
Right, I really have to go. Sorry, guys.
All right.
It's been real.
Thank you, Ben. We really appreciate you taking the time away from whatever friggin' PowerPoint you are making or whatever the hell.
Tell me about it. See you.
See you.
I love how delighted Ben is about PowerPoint.
We got a little bit of criticism from... Well, I got criticism from the chat room saying... when I suggested that you should move closer to work, Matt Duane in the chat room said, oh, because centering your life on work is the answer. Well, no, but having a holistic approach, thinking about all the things that you do in your life, I have what I think of as a really lovely apartment in sunny Parnell. We have a nice walkable community. Our neighbourhood has, you know, everything that we want. We're a very short walk into the city, and yet I'm also only 11 minutes walk from work.
Now, this is Matt Duane, who's moved halfway down the country for his job.
Right. Okay, so what you're saying is he's
although maybe
a
also because he wanted to live halfway down the country, I don't know.
Is he a giant hypocrite? Is that the thing?
No, maybe. No, I mean, it's hard not to consider that. I mean, work takes up, you know, the majority of my waking hours. Well, not the majority of my waking hours, but a lot of them.
Yeah.
It's a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
And by extension, my family's life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing. I mean, so if you've got, you know, a job that makes you miserable, maybe being as far away as you can is a good thing. I don't know. But I think that commuting time is wasted time, frankly, most of the time, especially if you're driving.
I think about that, but I thought about that possibly even this morning. I quite like my commuting time. It's my time to... it's the only time I really get to spend by myself. I mean, I'm not working with other people directly at work, but there's, you know, always people coming and going. Commuting time is the time that I can just do what I want, not necessarily do what I want, but it's the time that I'm by myself. I can either just think, or I can listen to podcasts or the radio or whatever. It's the time that no one else particularly can bother me.
Yeah. And are you busing or are you driving right now?
Driving.
Right.
I can't bus. I can bus. This is what we were talking about last week. I can bus.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember that at one point you were able to bus pretty well. So I noticed that philosophy correspondent Ryan Sproul is on Skype. I bet he's not really, but let's see if we can add him and see what he comes up with.
It's like me who's always on Skype.
Yeah. I don't know if he'll even answer or if he does, if he'll realise that we're live.
I've got these three kids now, right?
Yeah.
And remember, I said I was going to have a vasectomy at some point.
Three kids. It must be time for a snip, 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 my friend.
So there you go. So I said I said to you, yeah, foolishly, and now I'm saying it on the podcast where people can hear it, that when and if that happens, I invite you along to come and talk to me live.
And hold your hand?
In a procedure.
Can I hold your hand? Will you squeeze it and crush it?
My hand? Yeah. Certainly. Nothing else.
Okay. Can I bring a camera?
We'll discuss that.
All right.
That problem I have now is, yeah, it's quite expensive. I mean, I can go on a public list, but it takes fucking ages.
Yeah,
it's not that expensive. It's like $400 to
go. Doesn't seem like too much.
No, it's just a matter of finding.
And it takes the pressure away from your lovely wife.
Yeah.
Because why should it be her responsibility?
Yeah, I just think it'll address the real problem, which is that Dylan just has to look at her and she gets pregnant.
I know. What is going on there? That's so fertile.
That's not actually what happens.
So, Ryan, I don't know if you've listened lately, but we've changed the format. So now we have the main show, which is 1 hour long. And now we have the extra large overflow. And we already recorded the main show. And then I saw that you were online. But we are, at the moment, broadcasting live to an enormous internet audience of 13 people.
Wow.
Wowee, 13.
That's actually more people than Ryan has talked to this week.
More than I care to.
Yeah, we haven't had you on for ages, so I thought I'd just grab you. See if you've got a moment.
Has Diana got any pots to wash or anything?
I have a moment, and no, she's at work tonight because it's a sensible Monday night and not a Tuesday night.
Right.
Oh, of course, Tuesday nights are the non-sensible nights.
That's right, they're the crazy nights. It's crazy.
Now, I briefly mentioned you, Ryan, because you studied religion at university.
I did, yes.
As did our guest last week, Gareth Hughes. No doubt you listened to that interview.
Oh, yes. I know Gareth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, did you study together? No, he didn't go to Auckland University, did he?
No.
But he studied, oddly enough, UFO cults. And he was not religious when he went into religious studies. You were religious when you went into religious studies, were you? And you became, I said previously that you became less religious whilst studying religion.
I was on the decline when I started, but yeah, I was still religious when I did start, yeah.
Oh, Dylan, what you mean is fewer religious.
Fewer religious, oh yes, of course. just two or three religions now, as opposed to the seven or eight he started with.
Just whittling them down one by one.
Yeah.
All right, what are we going to do? Oh, we didn't do...
What's your auntie been talking about?
What has your auntie been talking about?
What's your auntie been talking about?
Tell you what my auntie's been talking about. And actually, interesting, because philosophers here, what my auntie's been talking about is Louis, which is probably one of the most...
Louis C.K.'s show?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that in the second season?
Yes, second season now. I think it might just about be over.
Get my auntie to send me some. My auntie sent for my two-year-old a lot of Fireman Sam videos.
Oh, that's lovely. I don't have any idea.
Have you ever watched
Fireman
Sam?
Of course not. Are you mental?
Fuck, it's awesome. He's Welsh. And
that's all you need, really.
Well, the Welsh accent is fantastic in of itself. So he's this fireman in this little village in Wales called Pontypandy, which is Pontypandy? I think it's Pontypandy. And there's this one kid in town who causes all the trouble. Norman Price.
Norman.
He lives with his mum. There's no sign of his dad. He's got red hair. His mum doesn't.
Yeah.
Fireman Sam is the only other obvious person in the village with red hair.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So is this
Fireman
all...
Sam's rescuing Norman Price a lot. Norman Price.
Norman Price.
Everyone calls him Norman Price, even his mum.
You know, speaking of Welsh people, I wasn't going to talk about Torchwood, what's your auntie been talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But Gwen friggin' Cooper, I want to drop her in a vat of acid.
Yeah, that's only because she's awful.
She is so awful. Oh, my God. She's
welcome to Torchwood.
She's on my last nerve, I tell you what.
That I don't know.
It's on my last nerve. Are you enjoying that Miracle Day?
No.
No. Which is a pity because Children of Earth was fun. It was good.
Yeah. I think that... No, that was a special, like a Christmas special or something?
It was a five-parter. It was like sort of pseudo-season three to cap it off, but they made it one story lasting five episodes, and it was cool and a bit creepy and action-packed and swashbuckling and everything. Yeah. And this...
I didn't watch that. I didn't watch any of that.
Children of Earth?
Nope, didn't watch Children of Earth. And that was when people...
Torchwood at all.
A lot of people say that that's where Torchwood really turned around, because I watched the first season with a bunch of Doctor Who fan club people, and the general consensus was that it was just bloody awful.
Yeah.
And that was even amongst people who were giant Doctor Who fanboys.
Yep.
And then you just had, oh my God.
Well, that's me, and Torchwood's awful.
Yeah. So anyway, I should probably check out Children of Earth. Maybe
Yeah, just bite your fist and no, it's actually worth watching. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just the retrospect talking, or maybe it's the contrast with the series and Miracle Day, but Children of Earth was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I want to watch that I've missed out on by a fucking mile, as in like seven seasons.
Yeah.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, man. Watch that, man. What are you doing? But what are you talking to us for? Go watch it.
I don't think it matters that you haven't watched much.
I've got the first season on DVD somewhere.
Yeah. But just start now. Start with this latest season. I mean, there were a couple of years gap, right?
I have no idea. I've had the DVD for fucking ages.
I don't think you need to watch anything else. You'll get the idea.
No, I know the idea. There's not a lot of storyline. I just feel like I'm missing out. That's all.
Yeah.
You are missing out.
I find some of the episodes almost unwatchable, and then others brilliant.
Yeah.
I find that kind of that comedy of errors thing That kind of, I think of it as very French. It's not for me. It's not to my taste. But then every now and then, there's
he wins.
Yeah, there's just something going on. There's something going on. Like maybe he's a bit more right than normal. Like he could probably always argue that his perception of the etiquette of a situation maybe is right. But most of the time, it's like dickhead. Discretion is more important than, you know, your endless unnecessary point scoring, which is basically what the show is about. It's social retardation, frankly. Well, that's what I think. That's probably a bit of a shallow view of the whole thing. Oh, actually, also speaking of downloading stuff,
don't forget to rewind the tape.
Orcon have you guys might not give a shit about this. I don't know if either of you ever play games, but you've heard of Steam, I imagine. Steam.
Yep.
This is the Valve's distribution network, and they first created it for their own games, Half-Life 2 and Team Fortress and Portal and all that other stuff. But now a whole lot of other publishers publish their games on it. And
well, Civ 5's on Steam, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. It might be. Yeah.
Civilization 5 is on Steam.
Right. The problem is, I mean, I've bought a few games on Steam. The latest one I got, I bought two copies of it, and it was an 11 gigabyte download per bit. A lot of people's cap is only about 5, 10, 20 gigabytes a month. So getting these two copies, that will blow your entire cap. But what Orcon have done is they've installed local Steam servers, and they've put them in their what they call the Ozone. So Steam customers aren't charged for the data.
That's very, very excellent.
It's really
which has put Ben in an awkward position, because he fundamentally hates the Ozone concept.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't like differentiated traffic.
Yeah.
But he loves Steam.
Yeah. And this makes it both a fast download and a free download. But there are some caveats. You've got to watch out, because number one, their local cache isn't entirely populated yet, so it's possible you could get a game that isn't on there, although their intent is to fill it up with, you know, everything, which I think will probably take them a little bit of time, because it's quite a lot of stuff. And number two, Steam is a bit of a free agent. You're even getting a game that is on the Orcon servers, you might still not get it from Orcon servers. But there's a thing you can do when you're downloading it. I haven't done it yet, because they've only just announced this today or yesterday. When you're downloading it, you can press, there's apparently a play button, and that will tell you if it's coming from Orcon servers.
Right, and of course,
this is all irrelevant if you're not with Orcon. But I think Telstra also announced about the same time as Orcon did that they're doing the same thing.
Now, of course, the problem with being with Orcon is if you're not with Orcon now, you can sign up with Orcon, and that's fine, except for the fact that at the moment, more people are signing up for Orcon than Orcon can deal with.
Yeah.
Which has fucked their service level completely. Not in terms of delivery of content, of the actual internet product, that works fine.
My speed is still fine.
Yep, but in terms of being able to answer a phone call or get back to you in a timely fashion or anything like that, they're fucking fucked.
I'm really glad that nothing's gone wrong lately, because...
Ooh, yeah, crazy. I have problems.
I got Orcon Genius. I'm happy with Orcon as a provider. They work great, but they've just, this Orcon Genius thing or something has just caught them off guard.
And I switched over to Genius. I'm still on whatever expensive plan I had before.
Yeah. Well, I'm on Genius. It's good. It works. It's great.
I will change, but I'll only change when they're not completely overwhelmed, because most people say that they're not off, you know, for terribly long while they do the changeover. But I've seen reports of some people who were offline with no internet for over a week. Now,
apparently that's...
Yeah.
Now, I've come from LLU, so if you're already on an unbundled plan with them, so on the Orcon Plus network, I think it's incredibly unlikely that you'll see any downtime, because there actually is no change to be made at the exchange.
Why are they charging $100 setup fee?
Exactly.
Assholes.
Yeah, well, because at that point there is no chorus involvement, because you are already on their hardware. They just need to make configuration changes, apparently.
Yeah.
But so you'll be very unlikely to see any downtime. But of course, if anything does go wrong, like in my case, there was a problem with the handset that was delivered.
Mm.
So I've just got a replacement version has come today.
Yeah.
But that's taken a while, and it was incredibly. And again, it's only through Twitter that I managed to get hold of them, because it's fucking impossible to phone them.
Yeah.
So Yeah, and the only reason I even got my problem, my initial junior setup problem fixed, was because we all used to work with a couple of the, you know, higher up people at Orcon.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be a case of needing to know someone to get stuff done.
No, all right, that was just I have to go, so I'll leave you with this.
I see what he's done. Yeah, I guess he. It goes without saying that. He's such a little trickster. Anyway, we were actually talking about Louis before we went off on that long tangent. What he left us with was the gift of dead air, which was awesome, actually. It was good timing. It was all very well done. And for once, I didn't talk over it. Louis C.K., comedian, pudgy, middle-aged, balding redhead, hilarious, genius. He's on Twitter as Louis C.K., and this is his show. It's a labor of love. I understand that in exchange for basically being able to do whatever he wants with the show, which he's making just about by himself, he's getting pretty much no money for it and just about no budget. But thanks to that, it is awkward, heart-rending, and very, very real, very raw. And he's successfully gone two seasons, and I think he may have been picked up for a third. And it is absolutely amazing television, but it, you know, might make you feel uncomfortable.
Who broadcasts it?
Good question. I'll ask IMDb, I guess. IMDb, Louis.
Do you listen to the WTF podcast?
Yeah, I do. Mark Maron. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I really like what he does. It's very interesting, and he's created it by himself, which is quite cool.
Let's see. Details. Budget, $250,000. Is that per episode?
How many episodes are there in a season?
Well, this says Louis C.K., Louis, 24 episodes. I think there's 12 episodes per season.
It'd be very hard to imagine that he did a whole series for $250,000, but maybe. $250,000 per episode is a low budget by US terms, but would be quite a lot of money to make a very low, crude show. So who the hell knows?
Yeah. I don't see who made it. God, I so hate the new IMDb layout, which now is, you know, probably a year old, because it feels like they're hiding everything. Before, there was a lovely menu down the left and you could just click wherever. The production company is 3 Arts Entertainment. That doesn't mean anything to me.
You know, have you ever tried adding information to IMDb?
FX is who it is. FX Network.
Right. Have you ever tried adding information to IMDb?
No, I haven't, but I should, because I've got a couple of short films.
Oh my God, their back end is so fucked.
Yeah.
Like, so for a company that is so good at having information online, their actual interfaces for doing it is so bad. Yeah. So in terms of short films, here's another thing. IMDb run a company called Without a Box, and what Without a Box do is that they do distribution for short films for competition.
Mm.
So if you make a short film and you want to enter it in Cannes and, you know, the New York Film Festival and AFI and, you know, Rocky Mountain Film Festival, and however many other hundreds of short film festivals there are around the world.
Yeah.
You can load it up into Without a Box,
including
a screen a copy of the film, indicate, you know, fill out all the information, indicate all, you know, what copies of the film are available to be just shipped to distribution. And then you can submit them to festivals for, you know, minimal amounts of money. But that process, again, I've just been through it, and it's fucking awful. Like, Jesus Christ, their back end is just so shit.
Yeah.
So their UI people aren't very good at, certainly, especially the back end stuff, and the front end is questionable.
That's a bummer. I'm a fan of Without a Box, not having actually registered anything or tried to submit anything, because I don't think any of my stuff is up to that standard at this stage. Yes. I've been subscribed to their mailing list / newsletter for, I don't know, a year or more.
There's another service as well. There's Without a Box, and there's another one, the name of which I can't remember right now. So Without a Box does a lot of the film festivals.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do some of the big French ones,
right?
Including Clermont-Ferrand. I don't know. So the short film I've worked on was is using both of the systems now. I can't remember what the other one is, but But the other one was a lot easier to fill out. Much the same process, but a much nicer user interface, which was, after having gone through without a box and then going into this one, I was like, oh, this is a refreshing change.
Yeah.
Yeah, but trying to put information to the back end of IMDb is just about impossible. It's awful.
Yeah. Is it significantly changed from... I mean, it was just, you know, something that people
I've submitted information to IMDb for, you know, on and off for the last probably 10 years, I guess.
Yeah.
In fact, yeah, no, 10 years, because the first thing I put on IMDb was probably in 2001. So, and yeah, the back end is basically the same.
Yeah. Maybe it's time for a revamp.
How do you revamp something that big? It's just, where do you start?
That's great trepidation.
I look at something like that and I'm just like, nah.
Nah.
Nah, if it works, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
Don't forget to rewind the tape.
Let's wrap up. What's your auntie been talking about? What's your auntie sent you on VHS lately? Were there any other stories that we had that we didn't do?
No, we didn't have very many stories this week because we're so terribly unprepared.
I was prepared. I had 6 or 7 stories.
I added 3 within half an hour of the broadcast starting. And Ben added a couple once he joined. Yeah, there you go.
There are the stories about Apple faking up some of their screenshots and so on as in evidence in their case against Samsung, where they at least modified stuff a bit sketchily to make the Samsung stuff look more identical.
Now they also used an old old version of the tab, didn't they? Not the new one. So they used one that had a more 4x3 screen shape rather than the widescreen shape.
No, I don't think that's right. What they did was they distorted the photo of the tab. What they did was they used an old iPad so that the radiusing on the corners was more similar to the tab. I think that's what
really is that is it down to that degree? Does it fucking matter what the radiusing on the corners is though? I mean, that's just.
They also set up the icons on the launch bar, the launch pad, to look as similar to the iPhone as they possibly could. My Android, the display doesn't look very similar really to an iPhone. I mean, there are some icons there, but there's also a bunch of widgets around, and you know, I just don't think it looks much like an iPhone.
You couldn't look at my phone and mistake it for an iPhone.
No.
Nothing like it at all.
No. So I mean,
I'm so over this shit.
This competition in the courtroom, I don't think it's in anyone's interest. I think if anyone is actually legitimately ripped off, then you know, okay, I can understand why you'd want to be made whole. But
how would you even know these days? Where do you draw the line between companies just being big bald dickheads and fucking with each other, and people actually having legitimate gripes about challenges to reasonable innovations?
Yeah.
That's just, I thought the intellectual property system, specifically the US patent system, is just so broken.
Yeah.
It's just so broken.
Don't know how you fix that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fixable.
There was a thing on, totally tangential, although vaguely related because it's intellectual property issues. There was a chat on National Radio today. I heard some of it because it was live. And then I got cut off, so I didn't hear the rest of it. But talking about the, you know, the Skynet law.
Yeah.
Talking to is it Alan Freeth, the CEO of Telstra Clear, who've come out quite strongly and said, we think this law is pointless. And
that sounds right. And we've noticed a market uptick in our encrypted VPN traffic. Just coincidentally.
Well, yeah, they haven't said that yet, but I wonder if that'll happen.
Go to discourse.co.nz/VPN.
Yeah, it would be an example of encrypted VPN traffic.
Unrelated.
but yeah, just, you know, and he was very strongly pointing out the fact that, I don't know who was, it was during the daytime, so I don't know who was the interviewer, maybe it was Catherine Ryan, but he was pointing out, you know, how they believe, Telstra Clear believes that content providers should be encouraged to come up with new solutions to address the demands that customers have, rather than try and have legislation prop up their old business models.
For instance, letting me pay, having some mechanism.
Now, the interviewer, who I'm going to say was Catherine Ryan, because I think she does the daytime show, was saying, oh, well, you know, they already have an option in iTunes, And that hasn't done anything to stop illegal piracy, which unfortunately he didn't come back with the response I would have, which is, well, actually, iTunes has almost completely destroyed, has massively decimated piracy in music.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, who bothers to pirate music anymore when they can buy it on iTunes for much easier and fuck all money?
I would say that you could go even one layer deeper, Buan, and say, who bothers to pirate music anymore when it's so bad?
Well, that is another issue, yes.
Because, you know, we can auto-tune.
Well, let's see what happens.
That's the thing with it. Fuck, it's like, you know, the film industry comes out and says, oh, we're losing money, people aren't
losing
buying stuff.
Money! We need more money!
But then you look at the stuff the film industry gives us. They won't make anything new.
Yeah.
All Hollywood's interested in doing is making remakes and reboots.
Sequels and prequels.
And sequels and prequels. It's just fucked.
Yeah.
Oh, that was where I was going to... It's sort of unrelated. It was where I was going to go. New Zealand's... Like, fuck, it's hard to get New Zealand content on the screen. This was about Louis CK. So it's cool that Louis is making a show for fuck all money.
Yeah.
The way he wants to make it, and that someone's given him that opportunity to do it.
And it's popular.
And it's popular because, you know, he had a good idea. And it frustrates me. You know, you think of all the failed New Zealand television, and even after all this time, you know, we've had some good shows. Outrageous Fortune was good, and you know, apparently Nothing Trivial is quite good. I haven't really seen it. But
Melody Rules was groundbreaking.
Melody Rules was fantastic. But, you know, comedy in New Zealand fails.
Yeah.
And New Zealand television often feels so wrong.
7 Days is all right, but it's a direct lift from Mock the Week.
It is, and it's, you know, it's totally different. Like, it's sitcom or drama.
Single camera, scripted, whatever. Yeah.
Scripted television.
Yeah.
Is hard.
Let's call it narrative.
Narrative, sure. Narrative, scripted television.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a few good examples. Jackie Brown Diaries, I think, was a very good example of working well.
Not that you're biased at all.
No, not at all. But anyway, so I was talking to someone once a while ago, some fairly senior person at TVNZ who then went to become a very senior person at TV3 who then quit. Mm. I don't know what the hell he does now.
Oh, what's his name? Paris?
Yes, that's the one. About the idea of using non-broadcast channels, so TVNZ On Demand essentially, to foster new talent.
Yeah.
And that you could pay, and they sort of did it. They made that show called Reservoir Hill, which was online only, and it actually won an Emmy Award.
Wow. I've never seen it or heard of it.
Exactly. But they made an online only show. It was sort of to appeal to young adults or teens or tweens or whatever the hell they're called. Vampire-y, you know.
Mm.
So that's what worked. But they made it, and they made it for a surprisingly low budget. It was online only. It did really well in that market. And sort of proved a point. They didn't ever commission it, but you know, I had this discussion with him about the idea of using something like TVNZ On Demand as a channel by which you could invest smaller amounts of money in making essentially pilot series for people. So you know, you and I have been involved in 48 Hours a lot, and we've seen there's some incredibly talented people every year who come out for fuck all money, no money really, and make really good short films in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And that there is clearly a lot of talent available in that arena, at least. And that those people, you know, some of the people perhaps could be given opportunities to make, you know, a 5-episode, 6-episode little series of something that could be distributed through essentially a zero cost online distribution model.
Yeah.
Trialed. People could give feedback. Because the problem for a television broadcaster, when we've only got a couple, is that it costs, you know, it's not just that it costs a lot of money to make a TV show, it's that it also costs a lot of money to put one on TV.
Yeah. Well, is it the same with Freeview?
Well, yeah, but it's not just technically put it on TV, but, you know, in terms of taking a gamble with it and,
right,
you know, its ratings,
the opportunity cost of
money, and,
So you know that some crappy, incredibly cheap US-made reality show will get some watches, especially based on how much it'll cost you to acquire it. But then taking the risk with, you know, some guys in a flat in Kingsland who, you know, have an idea.
Yeah. So and that was, and that's another thing where having something like Netflix or a large scale commercial video distribution channel, in marketing terms, within the country would be fantastic, because it gives you that opportunity. It gives you a way to distribute content to an audience. I mean, you can put it on YouTube, but YouTube is so just amorphous that it's so hard to get, you know, cut through in there.
Yeah.
Whereas if you can put something on like a dedicated platform where people go for entertainment, for scripted television entertainment, so something like TVNZ On Demand or Netflix or the iTunes TV store, even if it were widely used in this country, presents that opportunity as well. And it could do the same for New Zealand short film, because there's all these people who make short films, and the New Zealand Film Commission funds short films quite extensively. But no one ever watches short films, because where the fuck do you see short films?
Film festival.
Well, yeah, and that's about it. And so,
and Vimeo, that's it.
Yeah, if you make a short film in New Zealand, if you get funded by the New Zealand Film Commission, which is unlikely, but some people do, and you make a short film, and it probably gets seen more overseas than it does in New Zealand, because it'll go into competition overseas. But you know, your only chance to see it in New Zealand will be the odd film festival, and maybe it'll go online.
I like the idea of using the on-demand platform, because I mean, it seems like it's a lot of servers, and it's an entire infrastructure that's already set up to deliver video to, you know, a mass market.
Yeah, and mass, you know, and carefully curated entertainment video, unlike YouTube, which is just a massive dumping ground of all sorts of shit. I spent ages on YouTube in the last couple of days watching people be falsely arrested by the police, and police beat up people for videoing them.
It makes me miserable watching that stuff. I have to try and stay far away from it, because I feel just enraged. And
I'm just happy that I haven't seen any in New Zealand yet.
Yeah, it's tough. Eh?
Lots
tough
of American stuff. Ones and a few British ones, but no New Zealand ones.
Yeah, the worst is where you see people just shot by accident.
Which, oh, I haven't seen those ones. I'm not watching those. I'm mainly just watching the ones where cops get angry and arrest people and then get told off for it later on.
Yeah, it's tough. Skaters, the security guys chasing skaters and stuff. I'm amused by that, but man, the whole thing. All right, next story. Pricing. This is from Slashdot. Apple defies Australian government. Australian Federal Parliament have asked Apple why the prices of Apple products are significantly higher in Australia than they are in the US. 5 months after the query was put in Parliament, Apple has refused to issue any statement or apparently even acknowledge the request. And I mean, we've got the same problem, but I think even worse here, where Apple have just unreasonably high prices. Now, I mean, we calculated it a few weeks ago. It's something like a MacBook Air. It's only a couple of $100s. That they're overcharging beyond the cost of, you know, GST and exchange rates and maybe getting it here. But that's still a kind of an unexplainable price disparity when they don't even have local stores here to prop up. All they've got is some friggin', you know, a warehouse, and I don't even know if they've got a warehouse here or if they send it all from Australia.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, the whole... God, there's so much. The internet has fucked up so many businesses.
Yeah.
Because before the internet, who the fuck knew what a thing cost in the States versus what it cost here? I mean, you could find out, but it wasn't really practical.
Yeah.
Things cost here what they cost, you know?
Yeah.
You certainly couldn't buy them from the States and get them here, so there was no point even really considering that aspect.
Mm.
Things just cost what they cost. Now, we're in such a global marketplace that we expect things to be a globalized price. If it costs $1,000 in the US, we expect it to be, you know, $1,000 on the exchange rate plus, you know, a couple of local taxes here.
Yeah.
And is that unreasonable? I don't know.
It's unreasonable considering that everything is manufactured in the same place. So it's not stuff. It's not like stuff has to take some long journey here that it doesn't have to take to go anywhere else, because it's all coming from friggin' China. It's probably taking it might even be a shorter distance to come here than it is to go to the States. I'm not sure.
So what, now, you know, and at the same time, that's the same problem that they face in you know, copyright infringement, file sharing, is that it's not that, you know, it's not that that stuff didn't exist before. It's just that now it's really easy to get it, and we know it exists. And the example I always make is Lost, right?
Yeah.
The TV series. Mm. If you were a big fan of Lost, and you chose to get into the Lost message boards and stuff.
Yeah.
You couldn't not watch it at the same time as winter, we were at practically the same time as the winter here in the States. You could not wait the, I think it was like 3 weeks that, or 2 or 3 weeks that New Zealand managed to get it on, you know, by the end.
Yeah.
You couldn't wait that long because it would, the story would be fucked for you.
Yeah.
And then you'd watch something like, what was it? MasterChef, the Australian MasterChef that was really popular here.
Yeah.
The first series. It was fucked up as well. And it's that same sort of thing. It's the media and things are so global that it's, you know, if you're not in time with the US, which is the center of the internet, really, everything just gets fucked. So that's what drives, or a lot of what drives the demand for this stuff, is that we don't want to wait. Either we don't want to, or we just can't, because our value in the consumption of that entertainment will be ruined.
Yeah.
Survivor, you know, how hard is it to watch a season of Survivor on New Zealand TV and not have it already have been ruined for you, even by the TV guide occasionally?
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, it's the biggest fans who are most likely to see the spoilers, and it's the biggest fans who want to see them the least.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the people who are the most engaged with the production I really wish that there was a way that, you know, some licensing way that TVNZ and TV3 could just have it on the website ready. I'll friggin' pay to go there and watch it, you know, at the same time or as close as possible.
It's not even that. It's like Lost specifically. I don't know if I'm specifically not allowed to talk about this, but Lost, when TVNZ was screening Lost, whatever it was, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks behind, they could not physically get that show on air any sooner. They couldn't even get it. They couldn't possibly put it on their website any sooner, because the show that was delivered and was put to air had to arrive by airmail or whatever. They would not put it on a satellite. So the show was so tight on its US deadline that the stuff that arrived for promos use wasn't finished.
Right.
Like, you know, it had green screens still visible, it had sound effects missing.
Wow.
Yeah. So there was, you know, it's not like the show is just sitting in a warehouse in the States waiting to be screened by Fox or ABC or CBS or whoever it is. It's actually being pushed straight out of the production, straight onto ABC, and then being put into the international distribution chain. So, you know, it's not just that we are woefully behind because the broadcasters here want us to be, or you know, it takes time to schedule things or whatever. It's also that they're just, that all this production, all this stuff is made entirely for the US market, and there is no consideration for the international market being made at the time of production.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think that's at their peril, because if you look at a lot of movies now...
It'll have to change.
It has to change, because for movies, which, you know, it's a different market, but for movies, half of the earnings of a movie now is from the, quote, overseas market very often. Yep. So, I mean, that's half of your money. And often overseas advanced sales of TV shows fund the production of a TV series.
Yeah, no, totally they do. I mean, that's a lot of the money, because it's money that the productions can secure before, you know, or it's the network can't secure money before they screen the show, because they secure money from the advertisers, but the production company can secure money from overseas buyers on promise of product rather than actually on delivery of product.
And that is something that makes some shows kind of almost cancellation proof, or at least for one season, because the entire production run is funded before they shoot the first day.
It's interesting. There was a Canadian series called, in fact, there still is a Canadian series called, Something Point.
Flashpoint.
Flashpoint, yeah.
Yeah.
That was interesting because that was being played in the States and in Canada. But in the States and Canada, the first series, they actually interrupted the series. They stopped it early.
Yeah.
So as it played in the States, the first series, I think, was 12 episodes, but it was actually 14.
Mm.
So New Zealand screened all 14 episodes, was actually ahead of the States for a little while.
Mm. Sucked in. I've watched it a few times. What I like about it, Flashpoint is about the equivalent of a Canadian SWAT team. But the reason I like it is that it isn't gung-ho.
Yeah.
That their approach is to use the least possible force, and their approach is to... basically what I think our police do here mainly, which is containment.
Yeah, no, it's a very good show. I really liked it. I watched the first most of the first two seasons actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And good. I really enjoyed it because it was like that. It was a much more nuanced take on that sort of thing than you'd get if it was a US show.
Yeah. It's character driven rather than action driven, even though it's kind of an action show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all right. I mean, there's a certain amount of cheese in all Canadian TV, and that, and it does have that, you know, a little bit. You know, everyone's white. And just about everyone that you ever see is white. But, you know, there you go. You can't have everything. And
some of them talk French.
I think we can probably just about wrap this up unless there's anything else.
No, I'm done.
All right.
I've got a baby that's threatening to wake up any second. Well, mind you, for the last sort of 40 minutes, he's been snuffling like he's going to wake up.
Mm.
So now I'll wake him up.
Sleep well, baby. Is it nearly time for a feed?
Who knows? He's been asleep for, what is it now? Oh, he's been asleep for about 4 hours, so
wow,
can't
is
be
that
far
the
off.
Longest sleep he's had so far?
No, apparently this age they sleep sort of 2 to 4 hours at a time, usually. Yeah.
Right. Well, fingers crossed.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse, and not for much longer because that's it. Thank you so much for listening once again, live listeners. Thank you as well for your comments throughout the show. And for sticking with us, even though this was a unexpected on a Monday night, not when we usually record, and unexpected for two of our co-hosts here who didn't really expect to be doing it either.
And also, do let us know if you want a live coverage of my vasectomy, if it ever happens.
Yeah, quite right. Think about your entry for the Discourse Talent Show. You've got plenty of time to have it in, so there's no rush. But you don't want to leave it to the last minute, because what if you don't manage to get in? Then you won't have a chance of winning those amazing HTC trophies, which I understand are pretty nice phones. If you've never used Windows Phone 7, it's smooth, it's clean. Yeah,
it is. It's good. I'm interested to see what Mango we like, because my experience with Windows Phone 7 was immensely frustrating for the multitasking alone.
Yeah. Not being able to copy-paste. Man, come on.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of that, but the inability to do it at all certainly is frustrating.
Yeah. All right, don't mean to prolong the show any further. Thank you once again, beloved listeners. That's it. We're done.
All over.
Fish and chips.
Sorry, the show is cancelled. Beep.
Don't forget to rewind the tape.